Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:30 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Standard Time. Today is December 11th. Well, I thought in here today I would kick off with the bond markets, or indeed the loan markets. What is particularly interesting about the sell-off that we're getting in leveraged loans is that it started at the beginning of October, just around the same time that high yield spreads broke on the upside, and also when the stock market's selling off. And of course, all of that had to do, or the catalytic event that that kicked it all off, was when the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, said that we were a long way from neutral. Well, he's obviously revised his statements since then, but we're still in a risk-off environment. And that's particularly the case for the credit markets. So one of the important things is that a lot of the companies that have taken out these leveraged loans are not listed. When we look at, for example, the constituents of this ETF, well, we can see that a significant number of them have been acquired by the private equity sector over the course of the last while. For example, Formula One Management has never been listed. Then when we look at, for example, Asurion, that's not listed either. CenturyLink, I think, is. But if you go down the list, McAfee, Bass Pro Shop, they've all been either acquired or they've been off the market now for quite some time. What that suggests is that a lot of the stress that is occurring out there on the horizon is not apparent in the stock market. That's, I think, one of the most important considerations, that it's exactly the same problem that we have, for example, in China, that a lot of the banks that where the bad loans reside are not listed. So that means that we really do have to pay attention to what is occurring within the credit markets, because it is reflective of what is in fact happening on corporate balance sheets, not just those that are listed, but among the unlisted sector. And of course, because we've had an extraordinarily long period of time where we've had low interest rates and abundant liquidity, there are a lot more privately held companies today than there would have been a decade ago. So when we look at, for example, the breakout that we're seeing in the high yield spreads in the USA, well, the most important thing is that ranges or explosions waiting to happen, and it is breaking higher in no uncertain terms. This also, I think, highlights the underperformance that we've seen, for example, in the Russell 2000, that small caps, by their very nature, are interest rate sensitive. But they are interest rate sensitive in exactly the same way that the leveraged loan market is sensitive to the tightening of liquidity. So that's a very important consideration when we think about the outlook for markets, that with the reduction in the size of the Fed's balance sheet, it's worth considering that over the course of this year, the pace of the decline has really picked up. That if I zoom in at just a couple of more years, we can really see that the pace of the decline kicked off in probably February, March. Well, obviously, that was the time when the market started to pull back, was in late January and early February. So there is clear signs that that investors are taking their cues from both the liquidity situation and the debt markets. And credit has a long history of leading the equity markets. So I think it really does behoove us to pay particular attention to the moves that we're getting, for example, in the high yield sector. Well, I've looked a lot at the spread, because that's generally how people regard the debt markets. But it's also worth taking a look at the absolute value of the yield. So, for example, we can see that there was a massive spike in high yield yields back in 2008, and they got up to about 21%. Well, that was pretty similar to the values that we had in the early 1990s, but at a much higher interest rate. On the last two occasions when we've had a pop in yields were in 2011 and 2016, then about the 10% area was where we started to see some support starting to come back in for the market. Well, this yield has got had a first step above the base for the first three quarters of 2018 and broke out in October, and it's continuing to trend higher. But the big level is 10%. If there is, in the absence of a very clear downward dynamic to arrest this advance, the first area of potential support is around the 10% level. And it's then the big question is, will that be where we start to see support starting to come back in? And quite whether that is going to be the case is likely to be very heavily influenced by what happens in terms of interest rate policy. So when we look at what's going on now in the stock market, the S&P 500 was well off its low yesterday, and it was able to reverse an earlier decline in here today, and it is now closing marginally up on the day. But it really does need to hold that 2600 point level. When we look at the lengthier chart, there's been a clear loss of momentum over the course of this year. The index has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean twice in the last 2 months. We've had an uptick in volatility, and this has been a considerable loss of momentum, particularly following a very consistent advance all the way from the beginning of 2016 through to the beginning of 2018. Well, a bigger range is not a particularly reliable continuation pattern. I think that's one of the biggest lessons that I learned from David all those years ago. And what we need to continue to see is that the lower side of this range continues to hold. Well, the breadth of the market is improving. That the number of shares that are not making new lows has improved. That is a positive. But the stress that we're starting to see in the high yield market is something that we really do need to pay attention to. And the underperformance of the mid cap sector is also something that is worth paying due consideration to. Then we have the banking sector, and the banks have not been able to reverse their earlier decline. And this is now a very clear downward break that the index had really advanced in a pretty aggressive manner up to the peak in January. It spent most of the year ranging, then broke down. It encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean last week, and then it has broken down again in here this week. So this is a downtrend. And if that's the case, well, then we're starting to see interest rate sensitive sectors that are really starting to underperform here. And again, that's a signal to us that the credit markets are experiencing tightness, and tightness in the credit markets is not really particularly good news. Well, everybody is talking about the yield curve spread, and it was in negative territory again in here today. It's down to 11 basis points, and this is a new low. So eventually, this is going to invert. The last time we had an inversion, or the beginning of an inversion, was at right on the last couple of days of 2005. And that's a potential outcome here as well, that we know that as we progress through December, that markets become progressively less liquid, and that does give the opportunity to traders to really get aggressive and to move markets. So there is a potential that the market is talking itself into a recession here, and the actions of central banks in removing liquidity is certainly a causal factor in that. Well, that really brings us to the point about Europe. The Euro stocks, and perhaps if it's probably best to look at the long-term chart for the Europe Stoxx 600. This is a pan-European index. It's been ranging below 400 since early 2000. so an 18-year range, and it has now confirmed resistance in the region of 400 again. Well, it was a little bit steadier in here today, but wasn't quite able to hold the advance. But there's a clear progression of lower rally highs, and it would need to break that sequence of lower rally highs to really confirm a change to the trend, and the trend is downwards. Well, what Europe needs more than anything else is fiscal stimulus. And there is the potential here that that's what we're going to see. Italy has been leading the way in making the point that fiscal laxatives are required to free up credit within the system, and that's that the European economy has been gummed up by a decade of austerity, and people are sick of it. That's the very clear conclusion, that it was completely unrealistic. It's something I've been saying for years, that you can't expect people to have to accept lower standards of living indefinitely for more than a decade and counting, and with no sign of protest. Well, that's what we're getting in Europe today. It's manifesting itself in various populist forms, but the clear message is that people have had enough of austerity. Well, France is now adopting budget-busting measures, and the ECB has been very quiet about sanctioning France. Well, then if we look at what's going on in Germany, well, the banking sector in Germany is in a shambles. And then you have the automotive sector, which is going through an enormous state of flux. So there is a reasonable argument for a fiscal stimulus in Europe. And that is what the euro is starting to reflect, that it still has this sequence of lower rally highs. And this continues to look like a chart that could go lower. Well, then that is also a until we start to see the ECB either re-engage with quantitative easing, or for European governments to abandon the fiscal austerity that they have adopted, that what we really need to see is either the size of the balance sheet starting to I think accelerate higher again, or fiscal stimulus. Well, I tend to think that it's probably going to be the fiscal stimulus solution. That's what we've had in the USA, that's what we're now getting in the UK and in Italy, and the chances are that that is what is likely to be pushed through in Europe. But it's probably going to take a while. That when you're looking at consensus and changing ideology, then that's going to be a big ask. Of course, the ideology that needs to be broken is the idea that debt to GDP ratios and fiscal cohesion, which was aimed at leading towards a federal Europe, will have to be abandoned, or at least delayed. And that's a big ask for Europhiles. So that suggests that Europe is in for additional trouble. Well, the FTSE 250 was in positive territory in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. And there is a short-term oversold condition, but so far it has held this move below the psychological 18,000 level. Well, the pound is back around the 110 area, and it was in negative territory today against the euro. Well, Theresa May is doing a whistle-stop tour of European capitals and trying to drum up support, or at least some form of concession that she can bring back to Parliament in order to try and get her deal through. Of course, the deal as it stands is much more favourable to Europe than it is to the UK. It is basically a membership in all but name, and that is probably the worst of all possible scenarios from the perspective of the long-term health of the UK economy. Certainly, there is the short-term risk of a hard Brexit, and that is definitely going to require some form of adjustment period, which would require the pound to get substantially weaker, And also for a the other half of that is for a very clear pro-business strategy to be adopted. That really means that if there is an election, the result of that election is going to be rather telling. It will be the arbiter between whether the UK has a rather difficult environment or whether it comes roaring back. So we're at, I think, a very critical juncture for the UK. Well, I think subscribers are more than well aware of which way that David and I think on this subject, but that doesn't mean that it's going to happen. The most important thing, of course, with markets is that they don't listen to what we think. The downward pressure that we're seeing on UK assets right now is representative of fear in the market. The fact that the FTSE 100 is back below that 7,000 level is rather important. It really does need to push back above it if the medium-term bullish hypothesis is to remain credible. And UK gilts continue to be rather steady. So there is no sign of a capital flight here. The reality is that the UK is a major economy and that it stands on the threshold of an enormous choice. There are obviously going to be massive challenges either way, because the political polarization that has evolved over the last few years, and it's certainly not individual to the UK, is not going to go away. What that really suggests is that we are in for a more volatile period, but that's equally true just about everywhere else as well. Well, in India, they have just appointed a new RBI governor, and he's a favorite of Narendra Modi. So the chances are here that Modi is going to try and buy the election next year. The Nifty index was well off its low in here today, and that constitutes a really quite significant upper dynamic, quite similar to the one that we saw towards the end of October. Well, upside follow-through tomorrow would, I think, begin to register the fact that that investors are beginning to conclude that the tightness that has been imposed upon the banking sector and on lending standards is going to be either removed or lessened considerably, and that the potential fiscal or debt problems that that could potentially create are not going to be tackled until after the election, which suggests that we could see a rally all the way through until the election, and then perhaps some consolidation. Well, when we look at some of the major shares, Reliance Industries is firming from the region of the trend mean, and it's a pretty similar story for Tata Consultancy. That was a pretty impressive upper dynamic that we saw last week. The Indian rupee, having pulled back from the region of the trend mean, was somewhat firmer in here today, at least by the close, although it did finish in negative territory. Well, the rupee is likely to be a victim of any fiscal stimulus, so we can't rely on continued support from the currency. But of course, one of the reasons that India is going to be able to cut interest rates or at least stop raising them has been the decline in oil prices. Oil today was only up about 30 cents, and the fact that it hasn't rallied more is probably reflective of the or reflective of, I think, this lack of appetite for risk right now. So gold has paused around this $1,250 area, but it has had a distinct lack of volatility, and it's unwinding this short-term overbought condition just by doing nothing. Well, this is right in the region of the trend mean, and there has been an upward bias over much of the last few months. A sustained move above $1,250 would really open the door to additional upside. So I think gold is at a rather interesting juncture right now, and I think there are enough of factors that are coalescing here that we could start to see it starting to outperform once more. Importantly, in here today, copper prices were a little bit firmer, and they have been holding the sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of November. But we do need to see it push right up through that 290 area to signal a return to demand dominance. When we look at the medium-term chart, then that also coincides with the region of the trend mean, and there is a clear triangular pattern evolving here. So when the breakout comes, it is going to be emphatic. And that is very similar to the kind of condition that we're seeing right now in natural gas prices. The range has not been going on for quite so long, but it is equally a very clear triangular pattern. When it breaks, it's going to do so in a dynamic manner. Then when we look at, for example, lumber. Lumber prices had accelerated in no uncertain terms, and then they have pulled back to the $300 area and bounced. Well, they're coming back now to test the lows, and they were limit down yesterday and reasonably steady in here today. But if support building is underway, then that $300 area is going to have to hold. Now, when we look at the 10-year Treasury yield, it was in somewhat more positive territory in here today. There is a short-term overbought condition on the futures, and they're right at the upper side of their range. So this is a natural area where we might anticipate some resistance starting to come through. Well, we're still in a corrective phase overall. The move that we saw on the Nasdaq yesterday, where it is potentially putting in a higher reaction low, we need to continue to see that that holds, but more particularly that it can sustain a move back above the 7,100 point level in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. Well, I've been talking for quite a while about a rotation going on, and it's very easy to think about the assets that are coming under pressure. I think it is also worth highlighting those that are exhibiting relative strength. So, and those are most particularly among the portion of the technology sector that has got very steady cash flows. So, for example, Cisco and Microsoft, and those that have adopted the subscription business model have held up much better than those that don't actually have any profits with which to pay dividends. Netflix was down again in here today. And despite the fact that it is still up on the year, this really does look like a completed top formation. Then when we look at Amazon, which has been the buy the dip, or which has been, I guess, the share which buying the dip has been most successful with over the course of this bull market. Well, so far it's still working, and this share is steadying from the $1,600 area. Well, I think anyone can see that it needs to push back above the $1,800 area to break the sequence of lower rally highs and really confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But that is looking like a more likely scenario now than it was back in the middle of November. So we're at a rather interesting juncture for Amazon. There has been a re-ranking, certainly, in terms of the outlook for some of these FANG shares. Facebook, for example, remains under pressure. That's despite the fact they're buying back 7 billion of their shares, that it has a lot of work to do in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. The best thing that's happened recently has been the rally this week, which is in the process of breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. It's at least holding out the potential for a reversion back towards the mean, but then we'll need to see a higher reaction low in order to really confirm that the lows are in fact in. So I think that there are some signs that we've had a big rotation, that some of the shares that were most at risk of pulling back have done so, and that an increasing number of higher yielding, or at least those that have got steady cash flows and reliable dividend income streams, are doing better. But of course, what that suggests is that it is defensive sectors that are doing best. The utilities index was up in positive territory again in here today, and it continues to firm from the region of the trend mean. When we look at, for example, some of the household goods companies, well, Clorox, for example, is extending its advance in here today. In fact, if we just simply look at the best performers within the S&P 500 today, well, we're presented with companies like Church & Dwight and Campbell's Soup and Clorox, well, all of which are the very household, excuse me, household goods companies. Campbell's Soup, for example, has been trending down now for almost 3 full years, but it does look like it is putting in a higher reaction low in here. When we look at, for example, Pitney Bowes, then there is the potential here that it could find support at a, well, if it is going to demonstrate that this is close to a low, then the low from that upside Q reversal in early November is going to hold. So this is a very interesting level for the share. And when we look at, for example, the valuation, well, the dividend yield of 10% is looking rather suspicious, and that potentially holds out the prospect of it cutting the dividend. But the estimated PE is 6. So what that's beginning to suggest is that if you look, for example, at the cash dividend cover and the cash generated to cash required, then and the price to sales, then Pitney Bowes does not look like an expensive company, and yet it has been trending down. Well, part of the reason for that is because other companies have been stealing its thunder, for example, Stamps.com, and then the decline in eBay has had a deleterious effect on the company, since eBay uses Pitney Bowes to print the labels for all of those items that get shipped. So the changes that have occurred within the shipping sector, not least with the cancellation of the shipping treaty that gave preferential rates to emerging markets to ship into Europe and the USA, that's been a catalytic event for companies like eBay that had got previously had very large numbers of Chinese sellers. And that's also part of the reason why companies like Stamps.com and Pitney Bowes had been selling off. But I don't wonder whether we're coming towards the end of that particular sell-off. Then when we look at what's going on in China, well, the Chinese market was steadier in here today, but it's got a lot of work to do in order to really demonstrate we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I'm going to tune into Jeff Gundlach's webcast in the next half an hour. I'm rather interested to hear what he has to say about the debt markets. I think that is one of the sectors that we need to pay very close attention to, and I'll relate whatever I learn from that in tomorrow's comment of the day. And with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.